This is AgriFutures On Air, brought to you by AgriFutures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello and welcome to the AgriFutures On Air podcast. My name is Steve Honor, and this week we are hearing about a world-first innovation in beekeeping. Beekeeping dates back to ancient Egypt, with the early apiarists building their hives from straw and clay. The modern beehive was invented by Massachusetts minister Lorenzo Langstroth way back in 1851. And even though there have been variations to the bee box, it's largely stayed the same. That is, until now. A team of commercial beekeepers and software designers based in Israel and led by serial entrepreneur Sar Safra are revolutionising beekeeping one bee at a time. They have designed the world's first autonomous bee box, and in this podcast, Sar explains to journalist Joe Mazzocchi how it all works and how it'll work in Australian conditions. Be amazed.
Imagine a world of automated beehives where bees go about their business assisted only by machines rather than humans. Sounds far-fetched? Well, my guest today is Sar Safra, who's the CEO at BeeWise, where Sar and his team have devised the world's first autonomous beehive. Welcome, Sar, to AgriFutures On Air.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into this subject. How does the technology work?
So in essence, what we've built is, think of it as a robotic beekeeper. We put 24 hives in a small container, and in the center of that container, we put a robot apparatus that essentially does two main things. One is constantly monitor the hives and the bees to aggregate and evaluate what is going on in the hives. And second is take action. So with precision robotics, we are able to apply medicine. If there's a disease, we're able to feed the bees if they need to, provide water, harvest the honey, split hives, combine hives, do all sorts of things that a beekeeper would naturally do. So the robot has two roles, monitoring and treatment.
And you've been trialing the new hives in America, I understand, and how are the results going?
So we've been trying the hives in Israel, which is a test bed for us. It's our backyard. We are headquartered in Israel and in California. They've been going amazingly well. So we are currently 3 years into this project and iteration number 18. So we've had 18 different iterations of these devices. And so as you can imagine, they improve over time and we add more features and we learn things and improve and kind of fine-tune the device to be perfect for the bee. The bee is our customer.
And so when the customer speaks, what do they tell you?
They tell us what they like and what they like less, right? So the idea is that the bee is a very versatile creature. They can live anywhere in harsh environments and in good environments. Our goal and our role in this whole, you know, on this planet is essentially to provide them a controlled environment that not only helps them to survive, but helps them thrive. And so what we're constantly monitoring is the health of the colony. A bee is a single part in a larger, think of it as a superorganism called the colony. And so we constantly monitor the health of that organism, of the colony. And we constantly add capabilities to our device to improve the health of the colony and to promote the colony's size and strength. And so device number 18 today is much, much better than device number 17, 16, and device number 1.
Does the size, I know you mentioned 24 colonies, does the size matter?
You know, so I'll talk about two different sizes. The number of colonies matter because our device is intended to do two things. One, pollinate, and the second is produce honey. So for honey production, you actually want a little bit more colonies in a single given area in a bee yard. if you will. You know, it's the ratio between bees and forage. But for pollination, you want smaller batches. So right now we found that magic number to be 24. At least in the US, that works well. I assume in Australia it would work well too. And then if you want more hives in a given area, in a bee yard for honey production, you can put two devices, one next to the other, or you can put four devices, one next to the other. So that small component of 24 hives can easily scale to more hives if need be in a single area. So the size matters, and in this case, we found that magic number.
And how do the bees respond to the machinery? Like, is the machinery noisy? What's it like inside the hive?
So quite honestly, when you put the bee at the center of what you do, right? So all the considerations are around the bee. So the idea is that the bees live in the same environment they live today in regular hive. These are called deep long straw frames. So these are regular frames that are in hives. And it's the same way in our device. The machinery is outside of the frames and outside of the hive, so the bees don't really interact with them. Think of it as, instead of a human arm pulling out a honeycomb out of the hive, it's a robotic device that does that. From a bee standpoint, there's very little interface with the robotics and the actual bees. And instead of human eyes looking at them, it's cameras, right? Computer vision. So the bees really, actually, it's a much more safe and comfortable environment for the bees, because when beekeepers get to their beehives, they open the hatch and then sunlight comes in to all the bees. The entire colony is exposed, all the 10 frames, right? And the pheromones go out and heat is you know, cold comes in, heat comes in. It changes the whole environment of the hive. When we actually look at hives, when the robot does it, they do it one frame at a time, and they take it, it's in complete darkness in a thermoregulated environment. And so they take one frame out, look at it, examine, monitor, treat, put it back in, then another frame. And so it's almost a non-event for the bees.
And where did this idea come from?
So My partner and co-founder, Elia, he's a commercial beekeeper, and he used to go out to the field day in, day out, and treat bees and, you know, just do beekeeping, right? And at some point he said, it's not logical that in 2017, 2018, we're still doing it the same way we did it 100 years ago. Drive out to the fields, put on protective gear, and do it manually with our hands, with no technology whatsoever. We might have mobile devices in our pocket, but that's really almost the only difference between how things work today and how they did 150 years ago. And so he said, he kind of went out on this journey to find technology to really help streamline and help the bees. And once he did not find that, he decided he wanted to make it happen. And so we joined forces and we founded the company and started devising the devices to help the bees.
And what's your background?
I'm more of a technical guy. I used to be a software developer back in the day, migrated more or gravitated more towards the business side. This is company number six for me that I've established. And so I'm kind of used to building companies from inception, from idea to revenue, to happy customers. In this case, happy customers means living and thriving bees, which we're very happy to report that we are making more, we have more successes, excuse me, around the bees. And we also have another customer, the paying customer, which are the commercial beekeepers that are actually able to pay us for this service.
Was labor a big issue? I know in Australia, finding beekeepers and getting people to look after the hives is an ongoing issue. Was that the case in Israel as well?
It is the case in all kind of Western high-paying countries. It's the case in Europe and in the U.S., even in South America, in Israel, and many other countries. And it's not only the case of lack of labor, it's the case of lack of expertise, expensive labor, and the fact that labor is very scarce. So expert labor is scarce. You might find unskilled labor to kind of help or carry out ancillary tasks. But if you, but beekeeping is something you really need to learn, and you need to, experience matters. As you gain more experience with beekeeping, you become a better beekeeper, and you can grow bees and keep bees in a better fashion for the benefit of the bees and for the benefit of the business. And so, you know, finding a very skilled beekeeper is something of a hard task today. Not many people go to school and come out and say, oh, I'm going to be a beekeeper for the rest of my life. And that's the problem.
And with your hives, also in Australia, beekeepers tend to move their hives around a lot. Are they mobile?
They are mobile. There are devices designed for the existing infrastructure beekeepers have to move their current hives. So we designed the device to fit the current trucks and cars beekeepers use. Beekeeping is a migratory business, if you will, right? Because of the pollination or nature of bees, you want to actually leverage your asset, your colonies, as much as possible to pollinate as many flowers and crops as possible. Again, both for the benefit of the crops and for the benefit of the beekeeper to generate revenue. So it's not only about honey, it's pollination and honey.
I know you've said that, a couple of times now, and I haven't really asked you much about how the AI and the automation actually works in the hive to create the honey and the pollination. Can you describe that process? Is it very complex?
Absolutely. So first I'll start by saying, you know, the ones who create the value are the bees. They pollinate and they produce the honey, right? All we do, the one thing we do and the one thing we are focused on is keeping them alive and keeping the colony strong. Then they do what they do. The bees are very good at pollination. They're the most effective pollinator on the planet. One, and they produce honey as much as, so they produce an abundance of honey as much as they can at any given moment. They'll go out and collect as much forage as they can and collect as much honey as they can at any given time. So they do that very well. They don't need our help with that. What we do is we ensure that back home in their hives, they have an environment that is productive to them. So we have thermal regulation. We regulate the temperature and the humidity for their benefit, so they don't have to do that. Bees are very sensitive to temperature inside their hives, and so if that temperature is not maintained, they work very hard. They spend a lot of time and a lot of energy on regulating the temperature in their hive. We do that for them, not entirely, but to some extent we help them, especially with the extremes. If it's too hot or too cold, these extremes are where you see some colony collapse, which is where we want to come in and help. We help them from disease. So if there's disease in the hive, the robot can identify it and apply treatment in the hive in real time in the field. Obviously with mites, the Varroa mite or any other pests, which are less common in Australia, and hopefully that stays that way. But globally, it's a huge issue. And so we are able to completely eradicate the pests in a given hive with no use of chemicals whatsoever. We can kind of dive into that a little bit later. And so all these things, and then just carry out beekeeping. So a lot of the beekeeper tasks are moving frames and optimizing the hive. Because it's a business, you want to make sure that all your colonies are strong or optimal, right? And so that means doing certain things that beekeepers do, and the robot can do that remotely for them. So you can sit behind a computer or on your iPad. You can be on vacation or in an entirely different country, and you can still remotely treat your bees. You can see exactly what the status of the bees are on your computer, every hive, every frame in a given hive. So that's that resolution. And then you as the beekeeper, you can make decisions remotely and ask the robot, do this, move this frame from here to here, split this hive, combine this hive, and so on and so forth. All these actions make for a very effective remote beekeeper. And instead of driving 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours sometimes into the field to treat your bees, you can do it from the comfort of your desk and manage many, many more hives through one single application on your computer.
What about in Australia? We have a lot of connectivity issues. So Wi-Fi, particularly in rural and regional Australia, is not as good as in the cities, although that is improving. Is connectivity an issue, or has that been an issue in Israel?
It has not been an issue in the U.S. and in Israel, where we currently operate. And if it becomes an issue, you can use satellite connectivity, which is a little bit more expensive, but definitely doable and is available anywhere on the planet. So there's solutions to everything. It's a matter of cost, and it's never been an issue thus far. And if it will, we'll definitely apply the right technology to solve it.
And are your bees living longer as a result of using this AI and technology?
No, bees don't live longer. Bees have the life of bees is measured by flight hours, if you will. They, you know, during high season where they fly a lot, you know, their lifespan is a few good weeks. And during winter, when they're kind of more at home, if you will, their lifespan could be a few months. They don't live longer. What lives longer are the colonies. So the problem we're dealing with is when colonies collapse. Bees die out all the time, and a queen can lay up to 1,000 eggs every day to make up, to compensate for lost population. So they have their own rhythm of life. The problem really is when colonies, entire colonies collapse, the queen and the 30,000 bees in the colony die out. That's a huge issue, and it's not natural. You don't see that in nature as much before, you know, the last 50 years. And this is where we come in, and this is where the robot tries to identify beforehand when these things are going to happen, and then apply the right treatment, intervene, help the bees, not for the colony not to collapse. That's the biggest worry we try to address.
And is that what has been the impact on beekeepers where you've put your BeeWise boxes and things?
So first of all, I'll say our device is called the Bee Home. Just so you know, this is how we refer to it, and that's the name of the product. So where we put Bee Homes, the impact is incredible. So I'll talk about two sides to that impact. One is colony collapse, or what is called ACL, annual colony loss. For example, in the U.S., we see an average industry-wide annual colony loss of over 40% every single year. So they lose 40% of the colonies that collapse, right? This is the colony collapse issue I was talking about. With our device, we see less than 10% colony collapse. For those same bees, same hives, you just take your existing colonies, put them in our device. The population takes you 2 hours to populate 24 hives. And then those same bees, only less than 10% of the colonies will collapse versus 40, which would have collapsed otherwise. So we see a significant impact on saving the bees, which is really important. And this is our goal. This is our KPI. This is how we measure our success. Bees that remain alive, or colonies that remain alive, A. And B, we see a significant increase in yield. Because what happens is now all the inefficiencies that exist with managing wooden boxes, 150-year-old hives, which is what the entire world uses, all the inefficiencies are basically gone or addressed. I'll give you a small example. Harvesting the honey. Harvesting the honey is a very expensive task, because what you do is you need usually centralize the harvesting. So you build a facility that can harvest thousands of hives, and then once a season, or maybe twice a season, you bring all your hives, all your colonies, to that harvesting facility, and you harvest the honey at once, all at once. So you can only do that so many times, because going out and collecting 5,000 hives and bringing them to a centralized facility takes a long time. And so what usually beekeepers do on the commercial level, we're not talking about hobbyists and people, sideliners that do it as a hobby, but the commercial guys that manage hundreds and thousands of hives, at the end of the season, when they collect all the honey they can, they bring them to those facilities and harvest the honey out of the hive. In our device, there's actually a harvesting facility inside every device. It's an extractor. It's a small spinner. And when a single honeycomb is full of honey, the robot identifies it, takes it out, harvests it in the spinner, in the extractor, and 15 minutes later puts it back to work. So it's a much more efficient mechanism, because the bees can fill in the same frames over and over again, and these frames are being harvested almost at real time or within a span of a day. And so we have seen in some devices, and this is something I don't guarantee or I can't commit to, but we have seen in some devices from a 50% yield, 50% increase in honey, more honey than the control, up to 300% more honey in some cases
That's
versus the
extraordinary.
control. And the control are hives just outside the device. So the environment is the same, forage is the same. And this is just by making the whole process more efficient, more productive, and keeping the colonies alive.
It seems such a simple idea. Well, it's not simple, it's very complex, but just the notion of it, what does the honey taste like? Can you taste the difference with the honey from Bee Home as compared to a bee box?
No. Again, we don't interfere in the whole biological process. We don't kind of touch the bees themselves. They produce the honey the same way. We extract the honey in the same manner, right? Those extractors that we have in our devices are just a small version than what you would have in the facility. So we don't, it's nothing different. What I can say is we can guarantee the quality. So in our specific case, in our specific device, we know exactly what is going on with the hive. So sometimes there's what is called honey syrup that is being given to the bees instead of forage. And our device can track that and can report on it and give you a quality report on exactly how much honey is produced from forage and produced from honey syrup, which is not really the honey you would like. And this is a great advantage that Australia has. Your honey is pretty incredible that comes out of Australia. It's usually directly from forage. And there's a lot of fake honey in the world right now that is from honey syrup. It's not from flowers, which means it's not real honey. I don't want to use the term fake honey, but it's not real honey because the definition of honey is, what bees produce from flower nectar. And if it's not produced from flowers nectar, it's not really honey. It's produced by bees, but not the ingredients are not nectar, they're honey syrup. And so our device can track that. And both as a beekeeper, you know how much honey you've applied. Sometimes you need to apply honey syrup. For example, in the winter, there's no forage and the bees need to consume something. So you might strengthen the colony with some honey syrup or not, again, depending on the beekeeper. But there's full report. When you deal with technology, that's the nice thing, right? There's full transparency, traceability, visibility, all the way through. So from the beekeeper all the way to the buyer. The beekeeper can share that report and guarantee a certain level of quality, because now they have actually a tool that monitors and reports on that.
Okay, that's a nice segue to the Australian market. Are you wanting to get into Australia? And tell me a little bit about that.
I have to say that I'm pretty amazed and surprisingly delighted by the Australian market because we have a lot of demand. We see a lot of people reaching out to us, taking the initiative and talking to us about the devices. We are a small company. I just want to say that we are a startup, a technological startup. And so remaining focused is imperative to our success. Stretching too thin is a risk to the business. And so as an entrepreneur or a serial entrepreneur, I've learned that in the past. And so we are now focused on the North American market. Israel, again, is a test bed, so it's not really a big market. But the next market we plan on engaging is Australia, New Zealand. And so we are starting to learn the market and find the right partners and analyze and understand what are the needs of the Australian market, which are a little bit different than the North American one. What are the opportunities? Where can we help? Is there real value we can produce? And based on that, decide on next steps.
That's really interesting because I was going to ask you about the possibilities of your technology in the Australian context, particularly in relation to, say, bushfires, pollination in remote areas. We've talked about honeybee health already, but certainly bushfire, extreme weather events seem to be a hallmark of the Australian way of life and for our bees as well. Is that something that you've started to look at?
Yes, because for example, in California, you have wildfires. It's also a big problem. But not only wildflowers, think about theft of honey, theft of hive. I don't know if it's as common in Australia, but there's a lot of issues when you deal with small wooden boxes. Our devices are bigger because they contain 24 colonies in them. So it's a little bit of a bigger device. Think of as a two. 2 meters by 2.5 meters and 2 meters tall. So it's kind of a box, a tall box. The nice thing about it is that it's easily movable. So you're moving 24 hives in a matter of minutes. You can come with your truck and pick it up and just move it around. If there's bushfires, you can get it out of the field and into the field relatively quickly. Again, granted, if it is remote and it takes you a while to get there, you might lose the device. But if you can get there on time, you can just move it out and move these things out relatively quickly. Instead of moving 24 hives 4x4 or on pallets, it's much faster to move it out. But quite honestly, it can't really survive a bushfire. So we don't have a, you know, kind of a sprinkler inside to help the bees. It's like if there's bushfire and it's caught in one, it'll probably be lost. The other thing is, you can track where your device is at any time. So if it's moving, you know that it's moving, you get a text message, your device is moving. And if you're the one moving it, perfect. But if you're not the one moving it, you really want to know that it's moving. A and B, you can see on a map, on your app, on your, you know, iPhone or, you know, mobile device or on your computer, you can see exactly where it is moving to. So if somebody took the liberty to kind of steal your device or just move it around, you know in real time exactly what is going on. So this is a nice thing with technology. You can actually tell and know. The other thing is we have temperature gauges. We measure temperature. So if it gets really warm and there's a bushfire nearby and it gets really hot, you will know that too. You will know that your device is in a danger endangered area because it gets really warm to an alarming level, and you get a text message. So again, whether you can do something about it or not, that's a whole different question. But at least the knowledge is there because the technology is in the field sitting, and you can actually know what's going on.
And just quickly, I did want to go back to the Vieira mite and biosecurity issues. Obviously, that's something that you're looking at.
Yeah, it's not something we're looking at. It's something we completely solve for. This is an important thing, especially in North America, and actually, quite frankly, in the rest of the world. Europe is suffering from a huge varroa infestation, and the numbers are alarming. What we've devised is a sort of an incubator where you can heat up brood frames and get rid of the mite without hurting the brood. The brood are the bees' larvae, if you will. And so this is a technology that is already in existence. We have not invented it. It's out there, except it's really hard to do at scale with regular hives. You're not going to come with a small oven into the field and then heat every frame at a time for 2 hours. This is what it takes. We can do it inside the device because it's a robotic arm that takes a frame, puts it in the incubator, so to speak, and after 2 hours takes it out. That frame is free of varroa and the brood is perfectly fine. And so that's a very effective, scalable way to get rid of varroa without actually using any chemicals whatsoever. We don't have any chemicals in our devices. We don't advise. You can still do it if you're a beekeeper. Again, we provide our device and the beekeepers can do whatever they want. They can carry out any beekeeping techniques they like, but we don't apply any chemicals in our devices, and we still can get rid of varroa infestations in the device in a matter of days.
And just to finish up, what do you think the future for Bee Home looks like across the world and in Australia?
Look, I'll be honest with you. We go out to the fields and we see those white boxes, the current beehives, and we tend to romanticize about it. It's very romantic. It's very nice. We tend to think that these are the natural habitat of the bees. They're not. Right? It's man-made. Somebody invented these devices, this technology, this wooden box 150 years ago. This person's name is Langstroth. He invented this device and he patented it. And then this became the norm and the standard. And since then, if you're a beekeeper and you want to keep bees, you buy these regular, you know, beehives, if you will. And there's a lot of other types of beehives, but this is the most common one. We think that demand for the bee services has outstripped the technological capabilities of that box. This is why we're all struggling and it's so hard to keep bees today, because the underlying technology, the 150-year-old wooden white box, just can't keep up. More and more people on the planet are consuming pollinated produce and crops like cucumbers and watermelons and apple and almond and many other crops. And so the technology, the current technology just can't keep up. Something has to replace it. There has to be a new standard for a beehive, right? A new beehive. We'd like it to be the bee home, our device, but whether it will be or not, regardless, I believe that the current technology of the white boxes will disappear in the next few years. And again, I'm always cautious about making predictions, especially about the future, but I will say one thing we do see is that the current technology is just not keeping up. It's not holding up with the modern stressors that we have, like climate change and the pesticides and pests and disease. And so today, technology is so available and so affordable that you can actually build a robot that will take care of bees, and it will still be cost-effective for beekeepers to deploy it and still make a profit. And we can make a profit at the same time. And the one that makes the most profit from all this are the bees.
Well, Sarg, best of luck to be or not to be, as you say on your website. It's so exciting. And, you know, all the very best.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited and honored to be on this show. And it's all about the bees. Never forget the bees. Never forget the goal of keeping the bees alive. They're important for our health and for the planet's health. And so if that's what you have in mind, any listener, then you're on the right path.
And before we go, if people want to know more, where do they go?
Beewise.ag. Pretty simple.
Very simple. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Sar Safra, the CEO and co-founder of Beewise, speaking with Joe Mazzocchi. Thanks for listening today. My name is Steve Honor, and I look forward to talking to you next time. If you're interested in finding out more about ag tech and food innovations that are changing the future of Australian farming, make sure you listen to my weekly podcast on Evoke Ag. Until next time, have a great day.